following message is from a guest speaker of Emmanuel Community Church. More information about the ministry of Emmanuel Community Church can be found at emmanuelcommunity.org.
So it was, more than 30 years ago when I was a busy graduate student doing my doctoral studies. But at the same time, I was a church planting pastor. So you could just imagine how full and packed each day was for me. And one evening, I was having dinner with my family when my son Nathaniel, who at that time was about 4 years old, looked at me and said, "Dad, I think you should get a new job." Ouch. So I asked my son, "What new job do you think I should get?" Well, apparently he's been thinking about this one for a while because he had an answer right away. He said, "Naomi did not know about this, or she had forgotten it." And later we find out that this young man, a distant relative, Boaz, was an upstanding man, or standing, a man with a standing. And later we find out that he is a wealthy landowner. And incredibly, we find out that he is still single, an eligible bachelor. And then when Ruth goes out to glean some grains in a field, verse 3 says, as it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz. Isn't it interesting? It turns out, as it turned out, she found herself. The plot thickens, right? And then verse 4. As Ruth was gleaning the grain on this field, just then, we are told on verse 4, at that exact moment, Boaz shows up and notices Ruth. So, the author of Book of Ruth wants us to ask this question. Are these mere coincidences all along? Is Ruth just a one lucky lady? Or is there something else going on? Of course, as we read the whole book, what we begin to see is that at the human level, these are the things that are happening. But behind the scene, there is a living God who is actively involved in the life of Ruth through his invisible hands, guiding, bringing certain circumstances into a picture at certain moment, and guiding Ruth through her lives. Now, many theologians use the term providence of God or providential grace of God to refer to this reality that yes, at the human level, you and I are making certain decisions and we are choosing certain pathways. But for his children, children of God, our God is not just distantly removed, great God who's just watching us doing our thing. But our God actually participates in and is involved in day-to-day lives of his children. That's called the providential grace of God. Now, in today, looking at today's passage and chapter 1 of Book of Ruth, I want to go through together with you in gleaning 3 insights about God's providential grace in our lives. And hopefully today's message will bring both encouragement and challenge to you. So the first insight that I want us to think through is this, that God's providential grace, God's involvement in his children's lives, are also extended to what we might call ordinary people. like you and me. You know, when we read the scriptures, we could often walk away thinking, yes, I could see how God is actively involved in the life of King David, the great king of Israel. Yes, I could see how God is really involved in life of prophet like Elijah, who did so many miracle things for God's people. I could see how God is involved in life of Queen Esther, who single-handedly rescued her people. I could see that. But what about me? I'm not a king. I'm not a prophet. I'm just a Christian. Does God really have any interest in what's happening to me? Is God really involved in my life in any way? Now think, today's book, Ruth, is not about a king. It's not about a queen. It's about Ruth, who is not even a Jew. In fact, in chapter 1, we learn that Ruth was a Moabite, a Gentile. In fact, Moabites are often considered the enemies of Israel. They often went to war with one another. How could this be that Ruth would receive such an attention from God? And then secondly, we find out that Ruth is a young widow. Now, back in ancient society, like then, widows were considered people without much privilege, much protection, much voice. They were invisible. They were vulnerable. So Ruth was not just ordinary. She was in one of those class categories of being invisible and inferior. That was Ruth. God's providential grace also covers ordinary people. Now, as we go through our life journey, there are times when we come to this place where I feel so insignificant. I feel so ordinary. Or, worse yet, when I look at other people, they seem like they're moving on okay. Their life is like moving on. They're doing well in their work. Their children are seemingly very obedient, and whatever they touch, things turn out well. But then me, I feel like I'm kind of stuck. Things are not working out the way I had hoped. Is God abandoned me? Is God still involved in my life as well? We come to those moments in our lives, don't we? And when we do, I want you to remember this story of Ruth. Because at the end of chapter 1, beginning of chapter 2, Ruth probably was at the lowest moment of her life. And God was still with her. Now allow me to move on to the second insight about God's providential grace that we find in the book of Ruth. And that is this. God's providential grace covers even our human mistakes. God's providential grace even covers our human mistakes. You know how this book of Ruth begins in chapter 1 is this. This great famine comes to this town where Naomi and her husband Elimelech were living. And it was Bethlehem. This famine comes, and there is a great degree of hunger. And so that Elimelech, Naomi's husband, makes a decision. Rather than seeing his family starve, they decided to move somewhere where famine has not touched yet. Now, that's a wise decision, I would say, as a father of the family. But then, for some reason, he decides to immigrate to a completely different country called Moab, where God is not worshipped, but other idols were worshipped. So some of the biblical scholars ask this question, Why did he choose not to go to another part of Judah and Israel where God was worshipped to take care of this, the famine issue? Why did he, in fact, go to Moab? Right? In fact, the name Elimelech literally means, my God is my king. Well, evidently, Elimelech failed to live up to that name because he chose to trust the other gods who were being worshipped in Moab. Well, in chapter 1, what we quickly find out is that Elimelech passes away, and their two sons who got married to Moabite women, these two young sons also pass away. So now we have a family tragedy that all men died, and three widows survived. Now, one can say, wow, that is a great tragedy. And in some ways, that tragedy shows that Elimelech made a fatal mistake and got punished by God. But then good news is, the book of Ruth does not end with chapter 1. That's in fact only the beginning. You know, often when we face some important decisions before us, we as a Christians, we can often have this sort of crippling, fatalistic thought that, boy, if I make one wrong decision here, it could ruin me and my family for life. Perhaps some of you have come across that kind of experience where you're facing multiple decisions and you feel a bit paralyzed about what choice to make. You know, after seminary training, I served with a campus ministry group called InterVarsity Christian Fellowship for about 7 years, and I served on Chicago area between 1988 and 92. And one campus I served was University of Chicago, and the other one was a University of Illinois at Chicago, UIC. And I still remember every spring season when the seniors are about to graduate and then they all have different job offers that they are prayerfully considering, and my students get really stressed out. You know, let's say one student had three job offers, one from New York City, one from Los Angeles, and one from Chicago. How do I decide which one? And these are Christian students, so they want to do what they think is a will of God. I want to follow will of God, but I don't know what that is, and I'm just terrified. In fact, one student described it this way. I feel like I'm participating in one of those daytime game shows on the television where the game show host invites some participants to come down to the front and then show you three curtains. And then what behind one curtain is a toaster, but the other curtain is a brand new car. And like you're standing there trying to figure out, is it curtain A, curtain B, curtain C? Which one is the one that has a new car, right? And this student said, I feel like God is like that game host, asking me to choose, and I don't want to choose a toaster. J.I. Packer, if I could put up the PowerPoint, is one of the wise biblical scholars. And in one of his books, he said this, the fear of spiritual ruin through mistaking God's guidance is a sign of unthinking unbelief. Meaning, as we face choices in our lives, if our heart is to pursue what God has for me, if my heart is to make the decision for His kingdom and His righteousness, then whatever choice we make, God would honor that. And this means for many of our high school students, how you're thinking about which college do I go to? Which major do I choose? Or those who are finishing your educational journey and what kind of job should I get? Or for those of you who are singles, you know, who do I marry? Those are all important consequential questions. But know that God is. Our beloved Heavenly Father does not abandon you at that moment. He is with you, and trusting that God is the first thing we must embrace. And as J.I. Packer said, you know, whichever choice we make, as long as a choice is made to serve and love our God and love our neighbors as He had taught us to, He will make that choice the best choice. God's providential grace, even when we make mistakes, covers it and redeems our decisions. And therefore, we do not need to be paralyzed with the decisions that we are facing. And then finally, the third insight, and that is God's providential grace calls His people to make faithful response. God's providential grace calls us to make a faithful response. This is an important point because some of you might be thinking, wait a minute, if God is arranging certain circumstances to shape our courseways, to guide us this way and that way, that sounds like He's doing everything and we're like puppets. Well, Book of Ruth tells us a very different story. In fact, at very critical moments, Ruth had to step up and make a very faithful response to God. Now, this is found in chapter 1, and this is the background, and some of you know this story well. As I shared earlier, when all three men pass away, now you have three widows surviving. And Naomi, the mother-in-law, looked at her two poor young widow daughter-in-laws and said, hey, you know, you're still young. Why don't you go back to your parents' house and get remarried? That would be happy for you, and that would mean less burden for me. When she said that first time, both daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah, both said, no, no, no. We want to follow you and take care of you. And then second time, Naomi said, no, no, my daughters. You staying with me will bring me more burden and pain. Please go back to your parents' house so that you could get remarried. Now, at that point, Orpah, the first daughter-in-law, obeys Naomi and goes back. And we never hear about her again. The second daughter-in-law, Ruth, has a completely different response. And this is recorded in verse 16 and 17 of first chapter. And this is what Ruth said. Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you, that is Naomi, or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. You know, the Old Testament scholars pointed out this is one of the most beautiful statements of faith made in Old Testament. Because when you look at it, what she says is she's saying yes enthusiastically to two greatest commandments God has given us, to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and to love your neighbor as you love yourself. And as Jesus defined, what God meant by your neighbor is those who are in need. So here Ruth is saying, you know, conventional wisdom says I could go back to my parents' house and get remarried. That would be the smart thing to do. But I'm going to choose to follow you as an expression of my loving God and my loving you, my neighbor, who is in need. And so biblical scholars point out that this is one of the most concrete and beautiful statements of faith made in the Old Testament. You see, Ruth was not a mere puppet. At this very critical moment, she stepped up and said, I choose God and I choose you. It was August 1945. My father was 18 years old. And along with hundreds of other young men of his age, they were lined up in a railway station in Pyongyang, North Korea. And they were about to board train that would take them to Manchuria. You see, this was at the very end of World War II. And I don't know if some of you knew this, but Soviet Union, at the very end of the war, declares war against Japanese Empire. And they were sending hundreds and thousands of their soldiers through Manchuria to Korea and eventually to Japan. And to stop that, the imperial government of Japan began to forcefully enlist thousands of young men from Korea and elsewhere to go face this Soviet army. And my father was at that time 18 years old. Korea at that time was colonized by Japan. So he and other young men from that city of Pyongyang, they were rounded up, gave a very minimal military training, and they were basically told to say goodbye to your family because where you go, you will not come back alive. So can you just imagine as an 18-year-old just lining up on that railroad station to board that train that would take you to your death? But then as they were about to board the train, the PA system went on, and out came was the shaken voice of the Emperor Hirohito of Japan, where he announced that he is surrendering to Allied force unconditionally. And that's when they were told, all these young men, to now go home because war is over. My father returns to his house, and he grew up in a Christian home and a small Christian church, and his family members just thought this was a miracle from God. Their son, their brother that they thought they would never see came back. And of course, the whole independence, jubilee, celebration, it was a new beginning for my dad, for the family, and so forth. But that sense of jubilee only short-lived because he was living in part of North Korea, what we now call North Korea, where communism basically began to take over. And they began to realize that the church, Christianity, which was thriving in North Korea at the time, was their opposition. So they began to persecute the church by locking up pastors and elders. And at that time, my dad was a young man without seminary training who was a Sunday school teacher. But when the leaders of the church began to ask some of the younger Christians to step up, my dad had to think about, wait a minute, what happened in that August of 1945 when I was facing a certain death and then I was freed? Was it a mere lucky break? Or did God give me another life to do something for him? So my dad decided that he will step up, and when needed, he would do teaching and even preaching because there were shortages of pastors and elders at that time. My father was warned that when he does things like teaching and preaching, you too might get arrested by the secret police and be thrown into North Korean jail. He counted the cost. And soon enough, he too got arrested and he was thrown into the North Korean prison. Especially during those winter days when those prison cells were not heated, it was so cold, he said. If he fell asleep, he felt like he would never get up. So he would spend all night praying to God so he would not fall asleep. Now, it turns out one of the jailers in that jail place was his childhood friend from the neighborhood. And this friend told him, you know, soon you and others will be sent to the concentration labor camp, and if you go there, you will never come out alive. But I could make an opportunity for you to escape. But then he said, because you're a criminal of the state, you don't have a traveling permit. So even if you escape, you will get arrested again because you don't have a government-issued permit for you to travel. So then he suggested, if you do escape, you got to simply run into the mountain where no one lives and live there for the rest of your life. So that's what he chose. With the help of his friend, he made an escape, went into a deep North Korean mountain, and basically lived among animals and subsisting on whatever he found. And he said many of those days were literally experiencing God's provision for him in a miraculous way. Right? So he survived several months away from other human beings in a deep mountain. And then one day, he ran into American soldiers. He did not know Korean War broke out. And initially, the American soldiers went almost up to Chinese border. And then as they were retreating, my father was able to retreat with the American soldiers to the South Korea. And there he began his ministry as a pastor and so forth. You know, I tell you this story, which is a story I heard from my father so many times as I was growing up. And my father would make sure that when we hear his story, that we would not say, Dad, you are so lucky. You know, all those coincidences, you know, jailer, your friend from childhood days and running into American soldiers, you know, you were one lucky person. That's not what my father wanted us to understand. But instead, as people of God, when we make that critical decision for God and his kingdom, he would not abandon us. Life was not easy. I mean, my dad would not say that life was easy up in the mountain and the prison cell. But experiencing God's grace, providential grace, in a faithful way was more than encouragement for him. Brothers and sisters in Christ, perhaps some of you are at a place in your life where there are multiple challenges that come to your way. And also, as we go through our time in this time of uncertainties, right? Not too long ago, I was speaking at a college group in Chicago, and so many students were just anxious because how AI is disrupting the job fields that they were thinking about going into. And they were so anxious. That is now all around us. Uncertainty, anxiety. I want us to know from the book of Ruth that our God is not just watching us from distance, but our God is very involved in your life and mine. That's a providential grace of God. But of course, with this, we should think about our response to God's providential grace, because it's never the case that God would provide this for you, for us. This is providential grace just for our self-comfort and self-success. You know, this weekend we're celebrating the birth of the United States, 250 years old. And a friend of mine who is a pastor sent us an email about a week ago that really put the blessing of this in a perspective when he said this. You know, when you look at the entire human history, it would be less than 1% of human race who had the privilege to live in a society and a country where the freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom to elect your own leaders were guaranteed. Because most of our ancestors never lived in that kind of situation. That is truly a privilege and blessing that we need to be thankful for. But then I want us to go step forward, further as a Christians. And that is this. What might be God's calling for his people, for you and I individually and us corporately, for living in a land that is so blessed and privileged? Is it just for our own self-blessing and wealth and prosperity? Or is it like perhaps Apostle Paul, who also happened to be a citizen of a Roman Empire, used that privilege to do significant things for God and the gospel? You know? Yes, it is a privilege for us to live in the United States, to be citizens of this country, times such as this. Is that merely a coincidence, a lucky break for you and I? Or might there be a calling, a responsibility that come with that? And something we need to think about, especially this weekend. Let me pray for us.